All right, hello everybody. It's Tuesday. No, it's not Tuesday. What is it? It's Wednesday, June 8th. I got a little typo there on my syllabus there. Let me correct that. I'll come back and get that later. Okay, it's Wednesday, June 8th. Thanks for being on the webinar. Let's see, good to be back. Let's see, I think we took last week off, so it feels like quite a while since we've done one of these. If you are brand new to this format, which I understand we have some new folks, so for those of you who are a little bit with understanding this, just bear with me as I get through the preliminaries on this. But the way this works on the Wednesday, it's well, we can cover anything in and around the non-performing space. We do always recommend if you have specific topics that you want to make sure are covered, we do take those by emailing content@noteschool.com. We also have a special Dropbox set up for you if you need to send additional documents. So please always do that. That way it goes to Matt, and Matt can decide which call is the best. He can get that to us. The earlier you can get them in, the better, because sometimes we have to do additional research, or there may be times when who knows, we might get a question and I might need to bounce it off of Charles, or Charles might need to bounce it off of me, or vice versa. Eddie might need some additional research done, or we have to ask Eddie a certain question. But so we have a lot of different strengths and different areas, certainly a lot of overlap. So if you can get those into content@noteschool.com, we can organize those and get prepared on a timely basis for all of these webinars that we do. This one's a little less formal. The Monday and Tuesday, we try to do more, once again, on the deal orientation side, deal reviews, whether you're in the looking to buy one, already bought one, you're facing exit strategies, whatever it is, we try to fashion those towards the Monday and Tuesday call, Monday being performing, Tuesday non-performing, and the Wednesday and Thursday a little bit looser. We can still do deal review, but we can get into topics deeper. We can sometimes I'll have a PowerPoint presentation put together for you. Sometimes we'll talk about industry information on what's going on. Really anything in and around non-performing world on today, Wednesday, and then also Thursday with Joe's call on the performing side. You can participate on this by a couple different ways. You can always type in a question. If you look on your right-hand side, you have your GoToWebinar control panel, and on there you should see a tab that says questions, and you might need to click that little triangle to open it up. You can type your questions in there. When you do that, it shows up on my screen as well, and I'll be able to answer those. If you have a computer that is set up where you can talk through a microphone like I'm doing here and you have speakers on it, then great. You can also just raise your hand. You'll see a little hand icon and you can click on that, and that allows you to talk right over the call, and we can hear you and everybody else can hear you as well, and we'll do that. Normally when you submit something, we're going to ask if you will be on the call. Number one, we always prefer to have you on the call, not 100% necessary. If you have something that you need covered but you can't make the call for whatever reason, you can still submit it. We'll cover it on the webinar. You can go back and listen to it on the archives. Archives are put up pretty quickly. Normally by the following morning, you'll have the call from the previous night. So that's okay, but we do prefer that you're on the call live and that we can interact with you if you've submitted a question or topic or deal that we need to review. So let's see, another couple things here. There's a place where we can download documents for you, and it might be a spreadsheet like they did last night. It might be a document file, so you will see that if you look on your GoToWebinar control panel. Once again, one thing you should see on there is questions. Another thing right underneath that is handouts, and under the handouts is where you'll find that. So for example, right now we've got the 6816 NPL syllabus.x, and you can download that right to your computer. Sometimes on my particular call, because I'm running the whole show here, I don't have Matt behind me or anything like that, so I'm answering the calls and taking the questions, typing and talking. So sometimes I type notes right into the syllabus, and if I do that before you leave the end of the call, I'll always drag and drop that and give you a few minutes to download that as well. As I've been told, some people like to keep that for their notes. So no worries on that as well. All right, let's see. We don't have a whole lot of content to cover this evening, so we probably will have time for Q&A at the end. So if you have some other questions you're already thinking about, want to submit those, you can start to type those in your questions. And once I get to that part, I'll just start to go through those in the order that I see them on my screen. But I always do like to start with the content, obviously, that was submitted. So we'll get started with that. So we've got several questions here from Raymond, and I did look at some of the correspondence back and forth between you and Matt and the content at noteschool.com, and noticed that, well, perhaps you don't have all the documents that we need to give precise answers, but it's still a good enough topic and one that comes up frequently enough that we can address it, at least in general terms, so you can get a better understanding of that. So we're going to start with Ray's question. And let's see, yep, Ray's there. And then we've got a couple of questions on here as well from Kathy Woodson in regards to different opinions on attorneys. And unfortunately, that's another thing that we hear quite a bit, different opinions on attorneys. So we'll cover those as well. And then, as I said, we should have time for open Q&A. Before we get into all of that, I'm assuming that, well, it's hard for me to look on the list here and know who was there, but if you missed the Summer Summit, boy, you really need to consider coming to those events. This was, I don't know, we keep somehow making them better and better and better, and this one certainly was one of the best live events that we put together on this two-day format that we call the Summer Summit, and was really good. If you weren't there, once again, I highly encourage you to come to those. I know it's not always possible with travel and expense and that sort of thing, but if you can make it a part of a schedule to do that, I think you'll find that you'll be well rewarded. And just a great event. We had a lot of announcements on this one. We're going to be adding several new vendors. Mostly these vendors are going to pertain to our 50-50 model, which we're calling the turnkey model now, by the way. But those vendors can be used outside of that format. They play an integral role in enabling you to do that turnkey rental model most efficiently and most scalable, but they all have their own services that can stand on their own as well, where it might be as simple as running demographic searches. It might be looking for the cash buyers, or it might be looking to have property managed properly, or renovations, that sort of thing. We have new vendors. They'll be posted on the membership website. I don't think, I'll check as we're looking, I don't think they've been added just yet, but it's going to be under tools and resources here, okay? And you just go down to vendors, and let's see here, NAA is one of them. And let's see, yeah, the NPS has not been added yet, lead flow has not been added yet, so we're going to be adding some new vendors on here, so I would check back in a couple days or so. We just had some calls inter-office today, and we're getting those posted on there for you, so that's where you shall find the new vendors. We also have a little slide here for RentFacts Pro. So this, again, you don't have to write this down. You can, you guys can't see my screen? Okay, great. There you go. Thank you for telling me that. Okay, great. Got two of you to let me know. Thank you so much. I forgot. That was totally my bad. I forgot to click another button on here. I opened my camera, but I didn't open the screen up. So sorry about that. Here's the RentFacts information. RentFacts is the company that we're utilizing to identify properties that fit a good rental model. So again, kind of designed, we've had them custom design something for us on the 50-50 model. We do have a promotion with them, and that's one of the things we try to do with all these vendors, which is we get discounts or some kind of special service. We're working diligently to have one point of contact at all these different vendors. So, you know, if things fall through the cracks or there's some kind of an issue, it's not who did you talk to. We know who you talked to because it's going through one phone number or one email or whatever it is that we have set up with them. So there is a discount for RentVax Pro as well. They do on their website, if you just go to rentvaxpro.com, on the bottom, you can look at all the various reports that they put together. In fact, let me pull them up here. Okay, this is what their website looks like. Now, I just put in rentfaxpro.com that anybody can get to, but on the bottom here is where you can see the type of reports that they come up with, and very, very detailed reports on rent predictabilities and conditions and markets, all sorts of things. It's going to be heavily involved with us on the 50-50 model, but that's who they are. So you can explore their website, and then if you want to get those services, make sure that you go to rentfaxpro.com/EddieSpeed and put in that promo code Eddie30 to get your Note School discount. All right, the other vendors, because I didn't have my screen on, let me go back to that. The other vendors are going to be right on the main website, and you just go to Tools and Resources, and the second one down there is Vendors. Okay, and that's where you'll get all of those. We also gave out a number of new mind maps dealing with partial buys and full buys and things like that. So we're getting the electronic versions. By electronic versions, I mean ones that we can have online. It'll be a PDF file that you can have online. So we're getting those put together as well. I don't know that Zarina's decided where to put that on the website just yet. Probably going to be under training, under the normal materials, and we'll add new on there for you. So great event, and it was a pleasure to see everybody, and everybody I talked to not only had a great time, but they learned a lot. They were surprised with all the new announcements that we made and all the new things that we've been working on behind the scenes for quite some time. So it was nice to see those all come out. And I tell you, one of the biggest things I saw was the networking. And I say this in class all the time, but I'm telling you, until you get to one of these events, we do have a very unique group, and it's a group that is so willing to share and help other people and communicate and do deals together. And it was great to see new people, meet some of the people who have been around a while, other people who have been around a while, and now strengthening those bonds. It was really great to see that, and a privilege to be a part of it. So thanks, everybody who did come, and for those who did, I'm telling you, try to make that a part of your plans. Got another one in November, so appreciation of that. All right, so let's dive into the questions here that we have. And Ralph's wondering where my cowboy is. Yeah, from the I didn't get to go down there with you guys. I the Thursday night I opted out of because I had part of my responsibility for those who weren't there on what day was that? Friday. For the Summer Summit was we have this new program called the Turnkey Flip Academy, which you might have seen right here. And the Turnkey Flip Academy is a program that Eddie and I have been building for about a year now. And I was given the task to oversee that and present that in a good fashion at the event, to bring some vendors together who are not really used to presenting, not all of them anyway. And so my Thursday night, I hadn't even finished my own PowerPoint slides for the following day because I've been putting a lot of slides together for all the other vendors. So I missed that, Ralph, on Thursday night. I know you guys went to Fort Worth got through the weather on that evening and that sort of thing. But nope, don't have the old cowboy hat, so you got to deal with my... I do have Texas on there, if I remember correctly. Let me see my own picture here. Yeah, you can see the state of Texas on there. But that was from tennis. USA was playing Spain, and we went over to the Davis Cup match over there. But anyhow, all right, let's get to this. Here's part of Ray's questions. He purchased a non-performing note in Ohio. appears to be that the borrower was not occupying the property. But when they contacted the servicer, they found out that the borrower indeed at least asked for a loan modification program in May, but then all of a sudden just disappeared. Not too terribly uncommon. They're trying to do what they can do. And again, when people are facing this situation, it's something they're thinking about 24/7. So their minds can change fairly quickly on things. So it's not the first time we've seen that. You know, that's always where Eddie says, you know, and then they just went dark. You just don't hear from them anymore. And that kind of stuff happens. We intend to go forward with delay in contract termination or forfeiture. Okay, so this is a land contract in Ohio, and you're looking to enforce the land contract. And once again, the land contract is a hybrid instrument, and it does act differently than other security instruments like the mortgage and the deed of trust. If that should make sense to everyone. I just said on this call should make sense to everybody unless you are brand new. If you're brand new and that didn't completely make sense to you, I highly encourage you to go to training, non-performing, and look at this mini lesson. And the first one on there is called Three Important Agreements. And this one distinguishes, it goes through and talks about the differences, whoops. It goes through the differences between the loan, the security, and the ownership. And it's one of these things that we teach at the three-day training, and for many people that come in and they think they know a lot about real estate, they have a tendency to kind of do this number and sit back and like, I already know all this. And then they get involved in finding out that, well, this is different in real estate where you're not sitting at a closing just signing a bunch of documents. You're buying those documents. You should know what's in those documents and what they mean. So whether you're doing performing deals, non-performing deals, sub-performing deals, you have to know what's the IOU and what's the security behind it and who has the ownership. You have to know those things because it also influences what happens if things go bad. And the land contract is a hybrid. The land contract can act as the note and the security agreement in some states. The land contract can be separate in other states. In a land contract, you might have a separate note, and then you have the land contract, where the note's acting as the IOU, and the land contract is acting as the security agreement. And then you can have a beneficial interest in that land contract, or you might have a deed ownership through that land contract on a quitclaim deed. So yes, they vary. They are a hybrid. They are a result of seller financing. It's not going to be the result of an FDIC insured loan. Okay, so there will be a difference in the land contract. Ideally, with the land contract, what we want to do is terminate that, which really is an effective eviction. You're going to evict them out the property because the arrangement is, you have an equitable title in this property. You don't have full legal title until you pay me off in full. Okay, so if you pay me off in full, I give you full legal title. In the meantime, I hang on to the legal title. If you breach the contract, if you break the contract, then we can force you out of that property through an eviction process. Now, you'll see land contracts that have probation periods where it says we can do that. We have the right to evict you within the first 2 years if you're more than X number of days late, something like that. Then it defaults to a regular forfeiture, which would be a foreclosure. Okay, so a foreclosure would mean we're going to have to take them through that legal process. Now, that legal process might be judicial or non-judicial depending upon the state. So you're going to need some help with these land contracts when it comes to enforcing them. We don't want just a real estate attorney who understands foreclosures. We want a real estate attorney that understands land contracts. So when you're dealing with attorneys in other areas or looking for attorneys in other areas, don't forget the resources at hand. We have, for example, the forum. If you go into the forum, now the forum, there's a link right on the main site of the web page, okay, right there. So if we're looking at the main page, here's forum. You click on forum, it's going to ask you for your username and password again. Since I've already logged in, it didn't do that. But you go right here to forum, and I've already opened that up, so I'm just going to click over to this tab here. And as I'm going down here, you know, you can start to see what other students are looking for. and the open marketplace, and I'm looking for attorneys and that sort of thing. So foreclosure attorney, tax lien attorney in Ohio. Does anybody have a CPA in Ohio? Anybody know a good contractor there? This website, I believe, is still very underutilized, and we're trying to emphasize it more and more because it's a great platform where y'all can trade ideas, and it's just an extension of what happened at the Summer Summit, because I can tell you this exact same thing happened at the Summer Summit. I was talking with a pretty new student. She bought what she believed was a performing note, and it ends up, it went non-performing pretty darn quick, and now she's in a situation under a land contract. They haven't made a payment in 3 months, and she's ready to take action, but she's having problem with the attorney that her servicing company is using. Look, you don't need to use that servicing company or a workout company's attorney. If you want to use your own, you can use your own, and in some cases, that's what you have to do. So it just so happens that this was a deal that she was working on in Michigan, and I went to another a student there who I know has a lot of experience in this in Michigan, and not only was he able to refer her an attorney, it was an attorney that he uses, and it's in the same city where her asset is. Okay. Now, those are at live events. We only do a couple a year. The forum, by extension, the idea is it can do that same thing. So I would always try to reach out on the forum to see if other students can make any recommendations for an attorney and or whatever it is, and see what the response is. And if you haven't been to the forum, please check it out and go there and see what thought I had one I was going to click on here. See if you can help somebody else who's looking for something here. Maybe it was not performing. Yeah, Foreclosure Attorney Ohio. And Brooks had posted this about 3 months, 3 months and 2 weeks, and he got a response about 3 months ago. And here's an attorney that he was referred to. Date is very good, not sure. You know. So, again, great. This is perfect. This is kind of what those things are. Oh, here's one. Oh, Brooks responded to this one. My apologies. So Perry posted the initial question. Stephen responded, and then Brooks responded as well. Okay, and there's some other attorneys. So for me, getting a referral from a fellow Note School member, I think supersedes any other recommendation from a servicing company, workout company, in my personal opinion. And that's what I would do because Brooks, you guys have heard his name before. He's done done deals. He's been up at the contest level for Deal of the Year. And Steven obviously is doing some deals in that area as well. I'd much rather take a recommendation from a student than anybody else. So that's where I would start, first of all, to make sure that these attorneys not only just understand foreclosures, but land contracts. I ran into the same thing here in Florida. I did a lot of deals through land trusts, and I have to educate attorneys and title companies all the time on how land trust works because they just don't see enough of them, and they don't have the experience in them. And I think that's what a lot of people end up facing is an attorney that doesn't have enough experience, and they don't really know what to do with it. And their default position is, well, do what I know, which is foreclose like a bank would foreclose. Okay, we want to avoid that. So the other thing on the membership website under tools and resources, under helpful websites, once again, over here, this Legal League 100, these are attorneys that Five Star recommends. Okay, Bob Repass originally put the list together, but these attorneys, if Five Star recommends them, that means they deal in the distressed asset space. So they have a much better idea of how all of these things work. You click there, you go to members, and here's a whole list, and you can see what they specialize in. Okay, over here. Okay, so a couple of hints on that. All right. So that's what they intend on doing. However, we discovered that the borrower filed Chapter 13 bankruptcy on April 29th. So April 29th, they filed for bankruptcy. They asked for a loan modification on May 4th. This would indicate the loan mod request was possibly a delaying tactic considering the property and considering the property is being used as a rental. The borrower would not seem motivated to keep possession of the property. Okay. At this point, the case has been sent to an attorney May 18th. and we are still waiting for an update to see what our options are. Okay, great. Let's see what the attorney says. Unfortunately, we don't have the bankruptcy documents yet, and you probably won't. If they've just filed for Chapter 13 on April 29th, it's going to be, depending upon how complex their estate is, I'm assuming, knowing the assets and the price range that we're in, it's not going to be some big estate. They essentially have some personal debt and things they want reduced, and they want to keep the house. So the one indicator with 13 over 7 is they do want to keep the house. If they didn't want to keep the house, they would do Chapter 7. Okay, so there is an indicator there that they do want to keep the house. Now, they could convert it from a 13 to a 7 if they just don't have the money and that sort of thing. But at least on the surface level, it indicates they would rather work something out to be able to work with you. At this point, the case has been sent to your attorney. I hope your attorney also has some bankruptcy experience in there as well. Unfortunately, we don't have the documents. Do you suggest we get the info from the bankruptcy website for this call? Here's the thing. The documents he's talking about on the website, I'm sure what he's referring to is the oh my gosh. It just popped out of my head as I was talking. It'll come back to me. Somebody will probably type it up before I can think of it there. But there's a website you can go to get all the documents when it comes to bankruptcy. It's pacer.gov. Okay. Pacer.gov. And you can get a free account set up there, and you can look up the bankruptcy documents. But here's the issue. The bankruptcy documents aren't there until the bankruptcy has been discharged, meaning it's been okayed and cleared by the courts. So you're not going to see the documents that they're looking at through the bankruptcy on here, kind of like in real time. And maybe that's not what you meant, but again, I'm teaching for you, but for everybody on the call as well. Waiting for an update for the attorney. I've attached the OC as well as occupancy license invoice, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. Do you recommend we directly contact the attorney to better understand our options? Yeah, you haven't been waiting that long. Have a little patience. This is gonna play out. Okay. Considering this situation, do you have any possible recommendation approach from past experience? I know I don't have specific skills in bankruptcy, but in general, does bankruptcy offer us any leverage in the case? Okay, so the first thing we have to do in cases like this is you do have to learn what this means. So this is a really good website that you can read through. It's not really written in what I would call legalese. It's not the lightest read in the world, but I would absolutely go through this yourself so you understand how these proceedings work. And that way, when your attorney is saying something, you have a point of reference versus just kind of driving blind with the attorney, just assuming everything that they're doing is what you want done. So here's all the information about how that Chapter 13 works. And I would give this a quick read. Now, where did I get this? Well, first of all, you can Google search it, but the website's uscourts.gov, uscourts.gov, and I actually put it right on your syllabus here, okay, under Raymond's name. So there's the direct link for that. We also have on our membership website, once again, if you go to the membership website and you go to resources, and under resources, you go down here to helpful websites, you'll see U.S. Bankruptcy Courts information right there. And that takes you to this same website that I'm showing you right now. Okay? It takes you to the main page, but this is specifically for Chapter 13. Okay, so what's going to have happen at some point in time, all of the creditors, which you're one, but you're a higher status creditor. You are a secured creditor, right? The security being the property, versus somebody who has a bank that has a credit card with them. That's an unsecured type of loan. So you are a higher status creditor than an unsecured creditor, and there'll be a reach out to them, and you'll be corresponding directly with the bankruptcy court. You'll have to get together with your servicing company, let them know you're going to need a tally of all of the back payments and penalties that are due. All that sort of stuff will need to be done so you can submit that to the bankruptcy court. And the bankruptcy courts can have a lot of sway. So they might try to work with you and see if they can work out something reasonable that's acceptable to you as well as the debtors. And it might be as simple as that. Or they might find out these people just don't make enough money to even afford the payment on the home. And maybe they have to convert it to a Chapter 7. And they may even give you a release of stay, which means they'll take you out of the bankruptcy proceeding because you're a secured creditor with the house and you can proceed with foreclosure and everything else outside of the bankruptcy proceeding. So there is no, because the courts are so directly involved in an individualistic case in this, there is no this is how it works. The courts decide how it's going to work. They work with the lenders to see what's the best solution for all parties and what they can do, and that's the direction it goes. So this is not one of those things you say it's going to do this and then you're going to do that, you're going to do that. There's going to be options here. But the communication has to start with that bankruptcy attorneys and such. So I would get that rolling as well. And you're essentially staking your claim. And either way, it's not necessarily a bad thing. If they do bankruptcy Chapter 13 and they work with you and they can modify the loan and it's acceptable to you, well, you know what? That person might be in a better position than somebody that's living paycheck to paycheck, because essentially, as you read through this, the people declaring bankruptcy, they have to bring in all of their paperwork, all of their financials, and show everything that they have. They've got to look, tax returns. I mean, they've got to basically, here's where I am, I need help, and the courts are going to try to work with them to see if they can resolve that. And that's where all of this is going to start. For this. So read through that. I would also read through Bankruptcy Chapter 7 in case they do go that route as well. And again, neither one of those is really going to be a bad thing for you, because it means a solution is in place in front of the courts, okay, sworn by the courts. And what I meant earlier about they may be a better candidate than somebody's living to paycheck to paycheck. Look, if they're making the same amount of money, but all of a sudden their debt through the courts has been lowered or eliminated to what they can afford, because the courts won't approve the bankruptcy if the people can't afford it. So what they're trying to do is financially figure out what these folks can afford, and then they'll work with all the other parties to see if that can be made agreeable upon. And if they start making payments again under court order, not necessarily a bad thing. In fact, they may even put in there an arrearage account and catch up on some of the late payments that they, or payment mispayments that they have not made. Okay, so having said that, I'm going to come to you, Raymond, here. I think I've answered that in full, but I want to make sure I've answered any specific questions you have. And again, I agree with Matt. I saw the interaction that, you know, we don't really have the document, but quite frankly, even if we did have the documents, we can't interpret law, but that's really what's going to happen there. So, Ray, I'm going to unmute you there. Ray, how you doing?
Hey, Kevin, how's it going?
I'm doing good.
Yeah, I appreciate the response there. So, yeah, this was kind of a surprise, but, you know, we're working with, I guess, Blanca right now. We just found out we're working with her on another case. So she seems to be pretty responsive and helpful. And, you know, I think we're confident we can do something here. I guess one of the things I'm wondering about is you know, how long before we can maybe hear some sort of a reach out from the bankruptcy court, if there's a typical group or something like that?
Yeah, normally what they'll do is they'll put an estoppel on everything, which means the creditors can't call the person filing bankruptcy directly. And that's not really what you're looking to do at this stage. You're looking to contact that attorney who's handling the bankruptcy. And that should be a part of a filing that you could look up. But check with your attorney on that, on where they can get that. It might be in some legal publication or something like that that they have. and then you can reach with them because they you're going to be listed as a creditor, I would assume, anyhow, and they'll eventually reach to you. But you know, if your attorney can be proactive on that and reach out to them and you know, start setting the groundwork for that, you'd probably prefer that. That way you can kind of see what you might be looking at down the road here.
That's right. Okay, well, basically you answered most of my, I think, my general questions here. And, those are pretty helpful tips. I'll check out.
Yeah, definitely, definitely try to go through and read this article because it does – it does lay it out pretty good for you there, so you can see what the whole process might be.
Sure, definitely, yeah, because I personally am not familiar with the bankruptcy process, so you know, I'll take a look at that. And otherwise, I think I'm good for now, and I appreciate the tips here.
No problem. Good talk to you.
All right, Kevin. Oh, what?
What? Sorry, I just unmuted as you went. One more, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I was just and the other thing was it was pacer.gov that I was referring to. So that was good information there. All right. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. All righty. Let's see if there's any questions regarding that one before I go to the next ones here. Not sure. Yeah. Reading Ralph's again. Yeah, pacer. Okay, Roman, let me try to find you over here, Roman. I'm going to unmute you. Roman says that he's been able to see documents before it was over, that they were filed. Okay, so the initial filing there is, Roman, what you saw? You didn't see their actual financials and stuff. You just saw that there was a filing. Is that what's there? Roman K? Know that I unmuted him. Okay, I'll mute him back there. But if anybody else has input on that, let me know. Because yeah, the initial filing is going to be public, so I think you'll at least be able to see that, but you won't see any of the details just yet at pacer.gov. All right. Let's see. Ken said here could they have an attorney file with the court? Yeah, I wasn't quite sure, actually, and I meant to go back to that. There was a statement in here that said this would indicate the loan modification request was possibly a delaying tactic, possibly. And considering the properties being used as a rental, the borrower would not seem to be motivated to keep possession. And I did skip over that, meaning to come back. If this property is being used as a rental, in other words, the person who's entitled to be in the property according to the land contract, they, and again, it depends how your land contract is worded, but the land contracts that I think that we see, I believe if you look in there, they don't have the right to rent that property out unless they receive permission. Now, I'm not saying it doesn't happen in the real world because most people don't read the contracts anyway, and when somebody's not able to make their bills, they don't care what the contract says anyway. If they can rent it and make some money and live for free with mom and dad, that's what they're going to do, right? But I believe if you go through the land contracts that you see predominantly through our tapes, through Rock Top and you know the other companies, they can't rent it out without permission. So if that has indeed happened here, Raymond, if the person who's on the hook for the land contract is renting this property out, yes, absolutely, you want to petition that court or whatever local judge you need to have your attorney petition to get that assignment of rent, because what they can't do is rent that property out making an income and not pay the loan. Okay? Well, they can do it, but what you can do is file to have that rent assigned over to you, okay, because they are in default. Okay, so thanks, Ken, for bringing that back up there, because I absolutely meant to come back to it. So that might be something you do. I don't see where that really pertains that much to the bankruptcy. I'm thinking that could be something that could be handled before the bankruptcy is settled one way or the other. So that is probably something that your attorney is not going to go through the bankruptcy judge with, but they'll go with the local county judge to petition the assignment of rent. Very good. Thank you, Ken. Okay, answered that one. Yeah, and Bob Bulger's pointing out as a secured creditor, he would likely want to have representation at the 341 hearing. The attorney representing the debtor can be identified in the history on the bankruptcy file. So what he's talking about is when they get together, you know, the person submits all of their paperwork and the attorney is trying to put everything together and petition the court. At some point in time, they're going to have a meeting with all these creditors, and the creditors can make the claims and that sort of thing. And I'm trying to find it as I'm talking. And you can have or will want to have your attorney or your attorney's representative there at that 341 to protect your interest in it. Okay, so as you go through here, it'll talk about the meeting in here. It's not jumping out at me, but yeah. Thank you, Bob. Okay. Bob is also saying that you can see a lot of the info and docs in the history section before discharge or dismissal. Okay. So on pacer.gov, I'm thinking then, as I've seen this on some of the local sites, you can find this kind of information on local sites as well if you go through the civil courts, which I've done, and they post the documents as when something happens in court. So when somebody initial files, they'll have that there, and then maybe it makes it to the next stage of whatever it is, in this case bankruptcy, and those documents become public because at the end of that hearing it's to a different phase. So I believe that's what Bob's referring to here as well. Thank you, Bob. It's good to see you this weekend. Can you just ask the list of stay? Yeah, talk about the list of stay. See if he can get that. Very good. Yep. And Raymond's going to check with the assignment of rent. So great. Fantastico. All right, what else do we have here? Another one Kathy brought up, a couple questions here. Has a couple assets. If you take a note to foreclose and get a judgment against the borrower, is the note no longer valid at that point? Does a property have to go to a sheriff's sale and get a sheriff's deed for there to be a merger of title? I've gotten two different opinions from two different attorneys to this question. Does it vary by state? One attorney said the note is invalid after the foreclosure, and the other said it has to go to sale before the note is extinguished. I think that says the same thing here. What if the property never goes to a sale? Okay, couple of things on this. Again, Kathy, there's a difference between these documents that we deal with, and that's why that one little video is so important here. You've got the note. The note's just the IOU. Okay, that's all it is. Okay, and then you have the security agreement. The security agreement is what attaches the collateral to the IOU. If I don't pay you, then this. And then the final one is the deed, the actual ownership of the property. So the way it works in normal circumstances is when you buy or let me start it this way. When somebody signs a note in a security agreement, and we'll just say a mortgage for right now, they sign the note in the mortgage, well, as long as they pay, everything's fine. They have the deed to the property. When they don't pay, all the lender does is enforce the security agreement. So if the security agreement's a mortgage, then it goes through the judicial foreclosure process. If the security agreement's a deed of trust, then it's non-judicial. If it's a land contract as the security, then it could go through eviction, or it might have to go foreclosure, and that foreclosure might be judicial or non-judicial depending upon the state. Okay, so all foreclosures are a result of an enforcement of the security agreement. Where things can get twisted here is we have a tendency to just say note. For example, we all say we're in the note business. We're in the note buying business. We buy notes. We do in general terms, but that's really not what we mean. Okay. We have an understanding that says, yes, we buy notes, but we know that the notes are secured, and they're secured by what? The collateral. Okay. So technically, we don't just buy notes. We buy notes that are secured by a security agreement of some type. Okay. So in talking with your different attorneys here, I would say it would be very important for you to put things in writing so you know exactly what it is. So what happens to the note after foreclosure? What happens to the security agreement after foreclosure? That sort of thing. Okay. Now, again, I'm not looking at any specific documents here, but it says if you take a note to foreclosure, so you don't take a note to foreclosure, okay, because a note doesn't allow for the force of a foreclosure. A note, remember, we talk in class, you know, all the time, a little checkbook here. I could write you a check, okay? That's not allowing you to foreclose, okay? If I just write you a check and it bounces, do you have some recourse to the law? Sure, you can take me to civil court to try to get a judgment, okay? But so notes are not foreclosed. You can't take a note to foreclosure. Okay, what you do is you enforce the security agreement that note is attached to. So foreclosure comes from enforcement of a mortgage, a deed of trust, or land contract. Okay, that's pretty much it. Those are the big three. That's what happens with the foreclosure. Okay, now when you say here you get a judgment against the borrower, what this is implying, if there's a judgment, that means it is a judicial foreclosure. Okay, so if it's a judicial foreclosure, there's a legal process leading up to the sale. The last step before the actual sale is going to be the judgment, where the judge says, yes, this is the amount that they owe, and you can foreclose upon that. Okay? You're not going to get that typical judgment in a non-judicial one because the person's already given the power of sale. There'll still be an amount there, there'll still be a legal ruling, but it won't be in the course of a getting in front of a judge, which is what a judgment is. I don't know if the confusion is coming on your end and explaining what you're talking about, or you're just getting the terms very jumbled so where the attorney really can't distinguish between what you're asking them. So I would say if you put that in writing, I think you'll get more clear answers from them as well, because that will kind of force them to section that out and explain that properly for you. Does a property have to go to a sheriff's sale? Well, in some parts of the country, a foreclosure sale is known as a sheriff's sale. Not everywhere, but it's known as a sheriff's sale. And that then at the foreclosure, they issue a sheriff's deed. And as you guys go through and you start to look at due diligence files, you'll see sheriff's deeds. And a sheriff's deed means it was a foreclosure that was handled through the sheriff's office in that part of the country, whether that be that county or that particular state. Okay? So that becomes the new deed. What happens at foreclosure is the deed is cleansed. Okay, all of the liens are either paid off or eliminated at the foreclosure sale. That's the whole purpose of this. We're going to wipe the slate clean here. And then the sheriff reissues a deed to the person who won at the sale. So that becomes the new title to the property. Okay, now if they go ahead and do a loan on the property or something, then it might go from a sheriff's deed to a regular warranty deed or something like that. Okay, so typically when you see deed, that means the same thing as title to a property, but not always, okay, because as we've seen under land contracts, there is a couple different types of title. You could have legal title, you could have equitable title, okay, so a deed is a document of ownership. And typically the deed and the title is the same, but title can indeed be split. Into legal title and equitable title. So I'm thinking here why you've gotten two different opinions is you probably asked the questions in a couple of different ways and they weren't 100% clear on what you're asking. I'm just making that assessment simply because as I read your questions, I'm seeing the faults in it right here and I couldn't give you an opinion other than going through what I just did there. So And this is great for everybody too, by the way. These are things that, again, you're not taught these in school. These are things we kind of have to learn, and the more you're around, the easier they'll click. Again, it's just knowing the specific differences between those. And once again, for more help on that, you can go back through those videos, and I think it'll be pretty helpful for you. There's just a little PowerPoint that I use in the 3-day class. I don't even know. Let's see how long this is. It's 7 minutes. Okay, and it goes through some of the differences of those. And then I would also start to go through some of the tapes and the due diligence files. And I say this in class, and I kind of joke about it in some fashion, but to make a point of, we're buying those instruments. We're buying the actual documentation. Therefore, we should read them. You know, so if that means just taking out a land contract and reading two paragraphs a night, I would strongly encourage everybody to read through those things so that you can have a little bit more precise knowledge on how all these things work. Read through a note. Go through some of these files, and that way you'll have a much clearer understanding as to what they are and what they do. Let's see. Does it vary by state? Well, sure, because once again, we do have, and I'll show you where the website is here. Let's see, close that out. And yeah, let me do this one. Oh, no, I was going to show you from the website. Again, I'm going to go back to the website and go under resources, helpful websites. And foreclosurelaw.org is a good website. It's not the only one. It's one I use. Here's foreclosure information. Okay, all these different websites that you have here. Foreclosurelaw.org is the one that I share with everybody in class all the time. And I think you said Oklahoma and Ohio. So Oklahoma offers both judicial and non-judicial. So you're going to see deeds of trust and mortgages. Can they also have land contracts? Yes. Okay, so how does it work? Well, it gives you the outline of how that works. If it's judicial, here's what's going to happen. If it's non-judicial, here's what's going to happen. They go through and look at the power of sale. Okay. Now, here's the deal. If states offer lenders by state law, they can either do a deed of trust or a mortgage. In most of those states, you're going to see deed of trust all the time. Why? Because if the lender does have to foreclose, they'd much rather have it take a short period of time and make it non-judicial, and that's what a deed of trust does. Okay, but here's some little differences in here. However, if there have been 3 defaults, then the lender need not send another notice. And if the borrower's defaulted 4 times in the past 24 months and has been notified as above, no further notice is required. So again, how you notice, how often you notice, they're both legal processes. Okay, judicial and non-judicial are both legal processes. It's just the judicial, the borrower gets their day in front of a judge. In a non-judicial, they do not, but they still have to be notified. There's still guidelines that have to be followed. Okay. So Ohio does both. Ohio just judicial. Okay, Ohio just does judicial foreclosures. So yes, you know, is Ohio going to be different than Oklahoma when it comes to foreclosure? You bet, because in Ohio, it's got to go in front of the judge. Okay. One attorney said the note is invalid after the foreclosure. The other said it has to go to sale before the note is extinguished. Well, again, I don't know that the question is framed properly for them to answer this. A note, after the security agreement has been enforced, okay, so after the foreclosure sale is concluded, sure, the note's not valid anymore, because you took the property, okay, at the foreclosure sale instead of having the note. So you can't have both. You can't have both the note on there and get the property back. Now, what you can do, and this is slightly different than saying the note is valid, you can make a civil claim for a deficiency judgment in Ohio, which says at the foreclosure sale, as the lender, I wasn't made whole. I want to go after that person in civil court. You can do that, okay? But you got to get a judgment for that. And then you got to think, well, is it worth it for me to get a judgment? Will I ever collect on it? How much is it going to cost me in time and money? And Oklahoma says, well, you might not be able to. And it's probably, if it's judicial, you can. Let's see. You know, you have to read through it here. But that's what that means. So they're right there. I mean, after a foreclosure, that's it. You're either got cashed out at the foreclosure sale, or you got the property back at the foreclosure sale. So the note, it's you own the note. Now there is no note. Their obligation's gone. You took the property in lieu of being paid. Okay, it's the same thing as a deed in lieu. When you get a deed in lieu of foreclosure, you're getting the deed or the ownership to that property instead of in lieu of going through the foreclosure, but you're still waiving off that you've received the title, and therefore they're off the hook for the note, right? Okay. And the other set has to go to sale before the note is extinguished. So it's saying the same thing. When it goes, after it goes to the sale, then that's that. If the property never goes to a sale, the property's never been foreclosed upon. So it's still in or under for foreclosure. If a foreclosure sale starts and it doesn't go to a sale, you've seen notes in our tapes, everybody, that people have made payments 4 or 5 years, but they file a foreclosure process, so foreclosure was initiated, it was just never finalized. That can go on indefinitely because it's up to the lender to do the foreclosure, not the borrower. Okay, so if the lender never finalizes a foreclosure sale, it could, in theory, go on indefinitely. Okay, that's why we have these instruments to protect us as investors. Now, instead of going to a sale where there's an agreement where they sign the deed over to you, as in a deed in lieu, you get it back. If it's under a land contract and they agree on the land contract terms that, you know what, we're not going to make you go through foreclosure and all that. Maybe you give them a little cash for keys. They move out and they sign off on the deed in lieu. Great. Didn't have to go through a sale because you got your collateral either way. So a deed in lieu is a voluntary surrender. Okay. Same thing with a land contract. When they surrender that, it's a voluntary surrender of the property, where a foreclosure is involuntary. All right. Very good. Let's see what we got here. Jackie's saying, what is a mortgage deed from Florida? Okay. Florida is also a pure judicial state. Eh. You probably just saw that on your screen. My mouse just lost communication with... oh, there it goes. Okay, we're back. Let's see. So Florida is a judicial state. Okay, so we use notes and we use mortgages, and she's run into a mortgage deed in Florida. I've never heard of one, so I don't know if they're talking about two different things or what the case is. I've never heard of a mortgage deed in Florida. I'd love to see one if you have one. What they may be calling a mortgage deed, they may be calling that may be another verbiage. Here's one for a land contract. Now let's see. Term includes. Mortgage deed made entry between mortgage E, what terms includes a holder of this mortgage? Secure the principal sum. I'm just looking at a sample doc. So they do exist. I've never seen one. It's going to be some kind of a land contract. It says this one, sample one, says state of Michigan. So it's got to be some kind of a blend between the a land contract. So they might be calling that a mortgage deed, which, again, deed is going to be ownership of the property. Mortgage is a claim on a property. It's a voluntary lien on a property. So this is combining both of those instruments somehow. So it could be, my guess is that it's a different terminology for land contract. But first time I've ever seen one, Jackie. Oh, Lisa's asking if I'm coming to. I saw SF, and I was just talking about Florida, so I was thinking South Florida, Lisa. I'm going, am I coming to South Florida for a 3-day? No. But SF, San Fran, yes, I will. I'll be, actually, I'm teaching all 3 days in San Fran, so I'll be there the entire time. So I'm sure we'll see you out there as well at some point. Another good question from Jackie, is the new Financial Choice Act Eddie's legislation? I don't know if that's a part of Seller Coalition or not, to be honest with you. It's ringing a bell, but I read so many articles, Jackie, I don't know. I don't know. Okay. Okay, great. Super. Kevin at Note School. Super duper. All right. Well, very good. I know we hit some topics there that are one might consider basic, but you know what? They're not really basic. They're fundamental. And every deal that you run into, especially in the non-performing side, again, it just you kind of have to know where those things fall into place. So I don't mind going over those again. In detail, because every deal that you're involved in, it has to be, you know, in top of your mind. Even on the performing side, what if it goes from performing to non-performing? What am I looking at? In the non-performing world, if I can't get it worked out, what can I do? What am I looking at time frame-wise, cost-wise, and all those sorts of things? So a good topic always to cover, and thanks for being on tonight. I didn't type any notes, so I'm not going to drag this back over there. Roman says, any classes coming up in Florida or Georgia? And I don't think so right now. Let me see. But just in case y'all don't know, you can go to Connect and go down to Events Calendar. This is typically how I find out where I'm going to, unless I get a ticket. But they book out flights a couple of weeks ahead, where the classes are a couple months ahead. And let's see, we've got San Fran this weekend. We've got a Rich Rewards in Raleigh. And then we're out Washington and, okay. They're adding some classes. I don't think anywhere Roman in Florida or Georgia, though. So Carolina is going to be the closest. To that for the East Coast, and we've got some West Coast trips. They've just and we've added one in Central in Indiana. So those should be hitting the calendar by tomorrow as well. So if you go check the calendars tomorrow, you'll probably see four other classes added over the next 3 months. So you can take a look at those. All right. Yeah, I know. We did the Fort Lauderdale. Didn't we do that twice? I think we've done two in Fort Lauderdale in the last couple, but nothing in Central yet, nothing in North Florida. Jacksonville might be interesting. There's some assets up in Jacksonville as well. Could do Jacksonville and do a little bus trip or something. That'd be fun. All right, anyhow. Okay, everybody, yeah, just keep an eye on the calendar. They'll have some other ones added on there. So thanks, everybody, for your time, attention, and input. Always do appreciate it. And look forward to seeing you again in the near future, somewhere around the country. And good talk to you. Y'all have a good night.